The government has dreamed up a new way to erode your privacy in the name of fighting terrorism, tracking prepaid debit cards. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll give you the details of this latest assault on liberty in just a moment.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Time and again, the government finds ways to make sure Big Brother is watching, always in the name of the war on terror. The newest idea is legislation to track prepaid debit cards. For years, people have used these cards anonymously, just like cash. No fuss and no financial footprints. For low-income people without a bank account, they provide important access to services like online purchases. But now, lawmakers want to burden prepaid cards with detailed record-keeping and surcharges. The real losers, of course, won't be terrorists who never follow the rules anyway. As usual, it will be us and our freedoms that pay the price. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com. Man meets woman on Craigslist and invites her over for a date. Then his wife comes home unexpectedly. What to do? I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll tell you how one cheating husband got what he deserved next.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy. It's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
In Colorado, 24-year-old Kevin Gaylor invited a woman he'd met on Craigslist to come by his house for a meet and greet. Just two things conspired to make this a bad idea. One, Gaylor was married, and two, his wife came home unexpectedly just moments before his new friend rang the bell. Did he fess up, you're wondering? Nope. Instead, he called 911 and for some kooky reason claimed that his date was an armed burglar. Officers rushed to the house, but the facts soon came out and Gaylor was promptly arrested for making a false report. Somehow, I'm guessing he spent a safer night in jail than he would have at home. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
G'day, welcome back to another episode of Truth News Radio Australia. It's the 13th of June in the US today, and of course it's the 14th in Australia where I'm broadcasting from. I'm filling in for Herowood this week due to work commitments, but I hope I have a very interesting show for you all. We've got some excellent guests coming up. First of all, we're going to have Chris Emery come onto the show for the first segment, just talk about a few brief things in his new film, and also to reply to an accusation made against me a couple of shows back. And then we're going to have Ken Jenkins, who is a filmmaker and a psychologist, and who is also a member of the Architects and Engineers Group, who's been involved in the production of most of the 9/11 films that have gained great notoriety, including Blueprint for Truth and Experts Speak Out. And in the second hour, we're going to be joined by David Chandler, who is really renowned within the 9/11 truth circles for making the physics simple and bringing the voice of reason to the 9/11 truth movement. Okay, so first of all, I just wanted to invite Chris onto the show. Are you there, Chris?
Yes, John. Thank you for inviting me. It's an honor, and it's amazing what technology can do. Halfway around the world, and you sound like you're in the room next to me. So anyway, it's thank you for having me on.
No problem. Well, Chris, as you know, I've been very impressed with the work you've done within the Oklahoma City bombing realm, especially with the new film that you've helped produce and narrate. Personally, I consider it one of the best truth and justice films I've ever seen, if not the best. And it's right up there, and it shows a dedication to going through the evidence with a fine-tooth comb and not allowing speculation to creep into any work. And I have to say that's such a great credit to you and the team that put that together, and it makes me proud that I'm a friend of yours.
Likewise, John. I remember when I had moved to Australia back in, it was our fall of 2010, and we had a couple of cold beverages at the pub down in Newtown, and I told you about the film, and it was still obviously pre-production back then. And but I really have to tip my hat to James Lane. He was the one that really stepped forward and brought the team together. I am one of many that actually worked on it. And Holland van den Neuenhoff, our co-producer, Deb knows the whole team very well as you know, the producer of the show. She helped us with our audio and did a superb job on that. And but Holland and James really were the gel on this thing. I got the interviews together. I was logistics. I made sure that the travel plans were put there and served an important role. But as far as getting the information sifted out and determined, we had 6 hours worth of information. I mean, it was somewhat perplexing. And a lot of times we had to keep cutting back because marketability, you really, 2 hours is the cutoff. And that's where we came in. So, but I appreciate the compliment, and I'm certainly passing it on to the rest of the team. Austin Green, our editor, my God, if it wasn't for him, you know, all of us played an important role. And if one piece was missing, it wouldn't have come together. But I really have to tip my hat to you, John. A lot of folks don't know that you're the one that organized the 9/11 Truth tour for Richard Gage in Australia and New Zealand. I mean, that is a monumental feat in itself. And so, congratulations back to you.
Yeah, I've been the spokesman for Richard in Australia for quite a number of years now and done most of the major radio interviews. And I was the principal organiser, as you said, of that tour, which happened to be the most successful international tour Richard's ever done. And it was a very good team that we put together to make that event happen. And obviously we also got Stephen Jones out here to the Sydney event. That went Australia-wide and then to New Zealand. And the Te Papa Theatre in New Zealand was a phenomenal event. An event that we all wish we could have with all sorts of issues that we know that are so important to you know, world peace and so important to the future of humanity. We actually, you know, had nearly, I think it was getting up to 800 people turn up for that event because it actually got proper press. It got proper coverage on the radio stations, in the newspapers and everything you would expect from such an important issue like 9/11. And it was very good to be involved in that event. And obviously another great honour of mine was the first conference we put on back in 2008, which was another excellent event where we had Yukisa Fujita, who was the director of the Japanese Defence and Foreign Affairs Committee at the time. His government's now in power in Japan. Obviously he was a very outspoken person. We
brought him to that, yes.
Yeah, that was a very, very important thing too. And thinking about these things, it just, you know, I know I just briefly wanted to mention, it's probably not really even worth mentioning, that a man by the name of Damon Crowe, who had actually helped us with the second event, supplied some money for some beverages after the event, and also a free call-in number, which he does for Herewood Show, made the accusation that I'm an agent. Now, that was a pretty hurtful thing, and obviously, you know, I was a bit upset about that, and I know that you've gone through the same thing.
Many, many times, John, I understand, and I just want to chime in here and say that Damon could not be farther from the truth. I've known you for, well, this October will be 2 years, and it's unfortunate that he chose to make those comments. They're the most inaccurate, if not unfounded, comments I've ever heard. And you and I have a lot of colleagues, not only in the truth movement, but you know, in the film industry and in the public relations industry. And it's unfortunately, like I said, Damon took the time to say that. And I will go on record as emphatically stating that nothing could be farther from the truth. And John is not an agent, has never been an agent. And, you know, I empathize with you, like I said in several emails, and I've been a subject of slander like that too. But just for the sake of the listeners in the show, John's the true thing. He's the real McCoy, and you can trust his word on this because he does the research. He's very thorough, and he's very careful about what he says because I mean, you have to be accurate. If you only got one shot to say a lot of one opportunity to say what you have to say, and you got to make it right the first time, and you do a stupendous job on that.
Thanks very much for saying that, Chris. I really appreciate it. What I will do briefly, if you don't mind, I put a statement out on Facebook. You can find me at Facebook if you want, just John Bursell. Very easy to find. I made this statement, so I'll read it out on air so everybody knows exactly what I said about the issue. Very disappointed that I've been accused of being an agent of the state on a regular podcast radio program I appear on, Truth News Radio Australia. One of the show's sponsors, Damon Crowe, has decided this is evident by my dedication to sticking to the facts and rejecting theories that he and others hold true based on their beliefs or gut feelings. Everyone who knows me knows that I care deeply about truth and justice. Having devoted many years to the campaign to expose the lies of 9/11 and the war on terror has cost me much indeed, including the breakup of my family, over $50,000 spent that I earned doing overtime night shifts where I work at Qantas, great damage to my career and literally tens of thousands of hours of my time. The fact that someone who considers his gut instinct a good basis for his accusations might give you an idea of sort of paranoid thinking we are dealing with here. Damon, this is to Damon, please consider the damage this does to my reputation and the fact that it will lead to a further fracturing of the truth movement, which you say is the aim of leaders like myself. And I also said there I'll be getting legal advice. I have had some legal advice on the matter. It won't actually cost me any money. It won't damage my reputation to the point where it's going to cost me money, so I'm not going to further that. But I would point out that I am a delegate for the Association for Licensed Aircraft Engineers in Australia, and the executive weren't very happy about the comments of Damon Crowe, and my president came out with a very strong statement on my Facebook page if you wish to read it. And as anyone knows, I'm constantly working to undermine the evil forces at work within our government. And, yes, I have been a member of the Australian Military Forces, and I was very proud to be part of the forces at that time. But obviously things have changed in the last 10 years, and I'm doing everything I can to stop the illegal wars and to bring an end to the war on terror.
Well said, John.
Okay, Chris, well, we've dealt with that issue. Well, I suppose we'll move on. So tell me, how's the film going in the time we've got left in this short segment? I've just heard rave reviews everywhere. I see it's winning awards and it's being put up at film festivals. Can you tell me a bit more about the film?
Yes, it was released December 2nd, and sales just were very, very blessed. They're still very steady. Thank you. Thanks in no small part, obviously, to Alex Jones and Infowars.com and huge promotional gathering there, and Alex and his team have done an absolute wonderful job of helping us. In the 6 months it's been out, we've been accepted into four film festivals in Nevada, Texas, North Carolina, and here in Oklahoma, and we've been awarded the Best Picture Feature Documentary in History Reality from our peers here in Oklahoma. And we're up for another award at the San Antonio Film Festival coming up 2 weeks. So this is all, it's all a pure bonus. We never, ever expected this, John. If you would have asked us a year ago, at this time, when we were in pre-production, if this would happen, is we would look to you like, you're nuts. There's no way. But it, as they say, when the truth comes out, it trickles to the top. There's a lot of good benefits, and we are taking this in stride and appreciating every minute of it and certainly not taking any of it for granted.
Well, in my view, Chris, you could have gone a different way with this film. You could have been a lot more conspiratorial. You could have made some accusations that were pretty heavy. You could have been a lot more controversial. But it just goes to show that at the end of the day, when people are killed, you know, by these events, they're very, very serious events. And people, when people see a film that's produced in a very sensitive, a very considered and a very reasonable manner that presents the facts, and the person that's watching the film can come to their own conclusions from the evidence that's presented, people will support a film like that. Now, I don't know why people think in some of these movements. I'm sure you dealt with the same thing in the Oklahoma City bombing movement, which, I mean, there wasn't a real big movement because we didn't have the internet, but you would have dealt with people that were coming up with crazy ideas and that were trying to undermine the good work that people like yourself were doing.
Exactly. And the irony is that the government's official narrative is, for lack of a better term, is just downright outlandish, if not crazy, and on the scientific and pragmatic sense. This is not crazy as far as a personal. We're not taking any personal attacks. We look at it for what it is and what it's not, borrowing a phrase from McVeigh's attorney. And the movie is the result of that. And I really appreciate you giving us a two thumbs up on that, John. That means a lot coming from you.
No worries. Well, we're coming on the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm broadcasting live in the US. It's the 13th of June. And thank you very much, Chris. And I'm hoping that you might come back in the second hour to talk to us again.
Hopefully we'll make that happen. Thanks, John.
Capital Coin and Bullion is a family-owned business built on the promise to bring you affordable pricing on all coin and bullion products. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer storable freeze-dried foods produced by Augustin Farms, ammunition at 10% above wholesale prices, Berkey water products, gift certificates, and our silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals, give appraisals, and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 2. Visit us at capitalcoinandbullion.com or call 512-646-6440 and say you heard about us on Rule of Law Radio or Texas Liberty Radio.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting live in the US through the Logos Radio Network. Our second guest now, after having a great little chat there to Chris Emery, is none other than Ken Jenkins. Now, Ken Jenkins is famous, actually, extremely well-known within the circles of the 9/11 Truth Movement from the beginning, right back in 2001. Ken's been involved in filming some of the greatest events that the movement's put on. He's also been directly involved in some of the latest films that have made a great difference to spreading the information about the lies of 9/11, including Blueprint for Truth and also Experts Speak Out. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Ken Jenkins to Truth News Radio Australia on the Logos Radio Network.
Hi, John. Well, it's great to be with you again.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Last time we talked, it was probably on the Visibility 9/11 podcast.
Yeah, I believe it was.
No worries. Well, today Herewood asked me to do a show due to work commitments, and I've just seen a few trends recently in the 9/11 Truth Movement, and, you know, in a way I sort of see you as the guru of the movement. I don't know if you take that well or not.
That's fine.
Is that fine? That's fine. Yeah. Well, I sort of see you as someone that likes to sit back and reflect and watch and listen and, you know, consider what's happening in the movement, what people are saying, what people are doing, what's the best evidence, when we're going in the wrong direction, you know, how to stop infighting, how to stop silly claims by people, you know, but to do it in a very gentle and a very nice way. Obviously, your group in San Francisco has been going the longest, I would say. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we in New York formed around the same time in 2002.
So how many years does that mean you've been dealing with 9/11 truth issues and the movement for now?
Well, I started my research into 9/11 just about a week after the event, and so I've been involved pretty nonstop since then.
Wow, so that's a wealth of information. Obviously, we have some people in the 9/11 truth movement that's still just coming in today, and sometimes I wonder what they'd make of it all if they saw some of the information getting around at present. Obviously, you might have heard earlier that a couple of shows back, one of the guys that we thought was on our side, one of the sponsors of a few events for us in Sydney here, decided that I was an agent based on the fact that he's got a gut feeling about it, and because I like to put forward only the best information with the best evidence, that makes me likely to be an agent. Have you come across this sort of thinking before, Ken?
Yeah, sadly, this dates back pretty much to close to the beginning of the movement. The kind of knee-jerk tendency for people to call other people agents just because they don't agree with their opinions on something has been going on, as I said, sadly, a long time. It seems to be sort of a simplistic way of dealing with complex issues that, and of course, there is reason to suspect. I mean, we know, of course, the infiltration and so forth happens. It's happened, been documented from movements in the 60s and 70s. But that doesn't mean that things are the same now. We live in a very different world now. And I am convinced that there's been very little direct infiltration of our movement. I'm sure there's all sorts of indirect stuff. But I don't think they need direct infiltration into our movement for at least two reasons. One is, as I said, the whole world's changed. Everything's now internet and electronic, and that makes it such that they can infiltrate without putting boots on the ground, so to speak. So they don't need infiltrators on the inside because they're already inside. They monitor everything we do. Then the second reason is that that we kind of are doing their job for them. In other words, because so many people are willing to call other people agents, it's created the divide and conquer they wanted from within. We don't need infiltrators to do it. We're doing their job. They're sitting back kind of laughing at us because we're so foolishly call our allies and our co-workers agents. So it's something I think really needs to be reduced. It's inevitable it'll happen, but I think it's important for those of us that don't do that so often to rein ourselves in and rein our colleagues in, because it's so destructive, the divide and conquer.
It is, and it was interesting that Damon in this interview that Herewood did with him, you know, Herewood's idea was just, you know, let's let these people have a voice, because there's quite a lot of them out there in Sydney. I've built my reputation as an Asian up. I sort of was thinking about it over the last few weeks, basically because I've rejected the theory that Israel did 9/11, and I've rejected, at least in Australia, that chemtrails exist. I haven't rejected the theory that they couldn't be, might not be thought about, or they might not be used in the future, or effectively, you know, aircraft, you know, providing condensation to the atmosphere and particulates from their exhaust are actually do affect the climate. And, you know, I'm open to these ideas, but, you know, I've rejected the fact that, that I've seen any chemtrails or there's any chemtrails around. So that's two. I've rejected the Israel did 9/11 based on not that it's not impossible, just that there's not enough evidence for it and it doesn't seem accurate. We've talked before, and everyone that I know in the 9/11 truth movement that's a reasonable, rational thinker that's been proven to be so has said that it's a symbiosis of criminal elements, and I think that's the most likely. But anyway, we don't really know, so I've rejected the Israel thing. I've rejected chemtrails just because I personally haven't seen any direct evidence. I've watched the films. I've seen the people point at the sky and say chemtrail, but I've simply said I'm an aircraft engineer, and I know that's a contrail, so that's made me obviously a worry for some people. They think that I'm preventing them from getting the word out about chemtrails. A couple of other things I've done is I've spoken out against some of the theories out there that are obviously false in my view. I spoke out strongly against the impossible speed claims of pilots for 9/11 truth of the planes approaching the towers, not just on the basis of the idea that we saw the planes hit the towers, so did hundreds of witnesses, and there was 50 different cameras that saw them also. But the fact that I, you know, besides flying in the cockpit of 767s on occasion, just that I happened to do last week on the way back from a conference, the pilots I talk to, and I work on 767s, I'm qualified on 767s on that actual aircraft, is able to do a very, very high speed, just that they don't normally do it because it's very, very dangerous. But obviously when you're planning on crashing a plane, that's not such a big deal. As you would know, I did a simulator test and got in a lot of trouble at work. Really lost my job over that one. But anyway, just to try to make sure that people realise that there were real planes on 9/11, whether they're the exact flights or anything else, who knows. But so that's three things that I've done. I've spoken out against, you know, the Jews did it or the Israelis did it. I've spoken out against, or I've said that I don't believe in chemtrails. I've said that I think that the planes were real on 9/11. And last but not least, which has been the one that's really caused me and yourself and many others a lot of trouble, is that I think the evidence shows that a plane hit the Pentagon. Now, that's a, you know, a very difficult thing for a lot of people to believe, because looking at the Pentagon for the first two or three years, I didn't think a plane hit the Pentagon either, and I know you didn't too, Ken. So, but through careful analysis over time and looking at a whole lot of things to do with talking to David Chandler, who I've got coming up next, talking to other aviation professionals, looking at the momentum and the actual kinetic energy that was involved, and looking at other tests like the F4 Phantom test, and then looking at the testimony of the people that pulled the bodies out and the bits of the aircraft out of the actual Pentagon, and then later seeing the photos and videos that have been produced further down the track due to freedom of information requests, I've changed my view based on evidence. And now we have four scientific papers showing that there's clear evidence of plane at the Pentagon. That seems to be why I'm an agent, Ken. What do you think of all that?
Well, clearly it's true then, huh? Let me just take each of those very quickly, one at a time. The most unfortunate, of course, is
Sorry, 1 minute till the break. Sorry, Ken. So, if you just want to get one.
We'll pick it up after the break then, but I'll just deal with the chemtrails quickly because it's so unfortunate. I mean, there's so many issues these days. There always have been, but more these days. And, you know, they don't really have anything directly to do with 9/11. And I think it's unfortunate that we use these other agents to divide our movement because, again, that'll work. Divide and conquer works. And as long as we can judge people based on other issues, we could divide the movement into a million little pieces and be totally ineffectual. So let's talk about maybe the other three after the break then, huh?
No worries. Well, thank you very much, Ken. We'll be back with Ken in just a few minutes. And this is John Bursell, your guest host on Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting live on the Logos Radio Network.
A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, 1995, will change forever the way you look at the true nature of terrorism.
Based on the damage pattern to the building, what the government says is impossible.
The grand jury did not want to hear anything I had to say.
The decision was made not to pursue any more of those individuals.
Some of these columns were ripped up, shredded, tossed around.
The people that did the things they did knew doggone well what they were doing.
Expose the cover-up now at anoblelie.com.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
It is so enlightening to listen to 90.1 FM, but finding things on the internet isn't so easy, and neither is finding like-minded people to share it with.
Oh, well, I guess you haven't heard of Brave New Books then.
Brave New Books?
Yes, Brave New Books has all the books and DVDs you're looking for by authors like Alex Jones, Ron Paul, and G. Edward Griffin. They even stock Interfood, Berkey products, and Calvin soaps.
There's no way a place like that exists.
Go check it out for yourself. It's downtown at 1904 Guadalupe Street, just south of UT.
By UT? There's never anywhere to park down there.
Actually, they now offer a free hour of parking for paying customers at the 500 MLK parking facility, just behind the bookstore.
It does exist. But when are they open?
Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and 1 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. So give them a call at 512-480-2503 or check out their events page at bravenewbookstore.com.
Live Free Speech Radio, LogosRadioNetwork.com.
Back to Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting live from the Logos Radio Network, US, across approximately 60 stations, I believe. Today we're speaking with Ken Jenkins. We're talking about some interesting subjects, about why someone like myself, a long-term, very successful and hard-working 9/11 truth activist, might be considered an agent, which is a funny sort of a reason to have a chat. But we're sort of working through a few issues of the way the mind works, and the way people evaluate evidence and think about events like 9/11. So before the break, Ken, I went through the four things that had turned me to an agent in some people's minds in the 9/11 truth movement. The Israel Jews did 9/11, which I rejected, not being enough evidence. My opposition to the chemtrails being a fact. Questioning of the Pentagon flyover, and actually now believing that a plane did hit the Pentagon based on the evidence and the scientific papers, and also obviously my rejection of the Pilots for Truth argument about a possible speed with the aircraft that we saw on 9/11, or the no plane arguments. And you briefly questioned the chemtrail thing there, Ken. Maybe you want to go on a little bit more about that and talk about why you think people have really latched onto that issue, and maybe, having a good understanding of psychology, maybe you can explain to us, how their mind works.
Well, I'd mentioned the chemtrail thing is unfortunate because it's not directly related to 9/11 and how it's so divisive to decide whether a person's an agent or not because of something unrelated to what we're primarily working with. The chemtrail thing, obviously, highly controversial. I'm glad people are looking at it in the sense that if there's something going on, we need to know it. I've found this doesn't seem to be a lot of heavy science and scientists involved with that movement, which I hope that happens, that we get the same kind of scientific support there that we've gotten with 9/11. But anyway, the other three issues are far more directly related. The question of whether or not Israel was involved, of course, is another deeply controversial issue. As soon as you start talking about who done it, tempers seem to rise. I'm personally somewhat open about that one. I think that they may well have been involved in at least some aspects of 9/11. I think the argument becomes more questionable when they try to indicate that Israel like did it, so to speak, because of course there had to be inside involvement. And I think the word you used earlier is the one I use quite often, a symbiosis, that there is a symbiotic relationship between, say, the CIA and the Mossad, and that they work together on things. And whether to say one or the other did it is ignoring that symbiosis and the combination of forces there. But the point again is, it's like, we don't know what happened. Let's not, knee-jerk call people agents just because we don't agree on something we don't know. We have our ideas, we have our theories, and let's just argue respectfully.
Interrupt you on that point, just to give two talking points that you can probably speak from. There was two points a couple of years back where Alan Sabrowski, who came out of the West Point Academy as a senior lecturer on military matters, strategy, etc., quite well regarded, I believe. I don't know much about the man. And also a journalist, Alan Hart, that came forward and said they made the claim that Israel did 9/11, but they didn't provide any evidence. And at that time, there was a fracturing in the truth movement, at least in Australia, because people like myself looked at that information and then considered it more damaging than positive for the truth movement. I personally did distribute the information about what Alan Sabrowski had said with a disclaimer, but many of the reputable sites, 911truth.org and 911truthnews, 911blogger, weren't supportive of those people coming forward with those statements because they saw that they brought the movement into disrepute. So sorry, just to interrupt with those two points, could carry on.
Yeah, well, those are very good points, John. I'm sorry I didn't bring them up myself. I'm glad you did, because the problem there is that when you go to whodunit, and particularly when you're trying to blame Jews or Israel or Mossad, I think the more you narrow that down and get to the Mossad end of the spectrum, the more likely there might be some truth. But the point is, you're bringing in a big can of worms. There's all kinds of issues that come up as soon as you bring in Israel and stuff. And I think they're all important and valid issues, need to be talked about. But in terms of furthering our cause of exposing 9/11 truth, it's easy to understand why people are not wanting to embrace that full on, because it just complicates things no end. I think it's most effective to keep to the solid evidence that we have in abundance, and to keep the whodunit argument sort of on the back burner, and certainly not to use it as a reason to condemn our fellow truthers. That's just very counterproductive. But the issue I'd really like to mention is the impossible speed and the various issues with the planes or no planes and so forth, because, I have such respect, John, for you doing the tests you did on the flight simulator, proving in a very substantial way that 767s can fly that fast at that altitude. Simulators, for those that don't know, are incredibly sophisticated in all the variables that are programmed into them. And if a plane, if a 767 wasn't capable of that speed at that altitude, the simulator could show that and would show that. And quite the contrary, John's test showed that not only can they go that fast at that altitude, they can go faster than that at that altitude. But the main argument that I find compelling, and I find that, people that try to argue that tend to avoid it, is the fact that the people in the buildings, many people in the buildings felt the building sway after the collision due to the energy transfer of the plane's momentum into the building, caused the buildings to deflect and to swing back and forth for a bit of time. And people felt that. And that you cannot do with internal explosives. You can't do it with holograms or, you know, vittery fake, video fakery, any of these other theories. Can't begin to explain how you can move the entire building that way. And to me, that's incredibly compelling evidence. But more importantly is the idea that no planes hit the buildings, with even if it was true, has got to be the most destructive theory that's ever come forth in the 10 years we've been doing this, because almost anyone's going to think you're crazy if you say that. I mean, there were literally thousands of eyewitnesses there on the ground in New York who saw those planes and saw them hit the buildings and so forth. So it's just craziness to advance that theory in a public way. If it happened to be true, if we hadn't already disproven it, you know, by all means, we want to investigate all theories. But at a certain point, you come up with evidence to where something's so improbable, you kind of got to let it go. But more importantly, you got to keep it off the public airwaves, because it's gonna be our undoing if it would ever really get traction. I don't think it will. I mean, it's just a crazy idea, but it's very destructive, and we have to keep in mind that our job is to convince enough people of what we're saying that we can get a real investigation and we can make this more and more real so we can really have an impact with it. And that requires strategy. And so in looking at things strategically, the questions of whether or not to blame Israel or Mossad, or the questions of bringing in these what I call exotic theories, the really improbable or impossible theories, becomes very much a question of strategy and how can we present ourselves as a movement in the most credible way. And that needs to be in the front of everyone's mind, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I agree. It just seems, you know, this is sort of one of the reasons that this show is happening today, is that we have the Vancouver hearings coming up a year on from the Toronto hearings, which were a great success off the back of the consensus panel that David Ray Griffin and others have put together to try to narrow down the evidence that we all agree on, so we can get that unity and that cohesion, so that eventually, you know, just like we're seeing now with the Oklahoma City bombing situation, that, you know, when people have relaxed enough about the issue so their emotion is removed and they can start to look at things rationally, they can come along to the 9/11 truth movement, look at the work we've done and say, hey, okay, well, this is what they all think is the case, and they can look at that evidence in a concise and in an accurate format like the consensus panel's trying to do and be very successful. But then we see after this quietness, after the 10th anniversary, as a lot of people have been worn out, obviously, you know, fighting 5, 6, 7, 8 years for the 9/11 truth campaign, a lot of the good people have sort of fallen away from the movement. Now we see these Vancouver hearings where we see all these same things that we've just talked about all coming through again. And we still see Jim Fetzer there. He was there from day one, and he's still here there today pushing these same things, the holograms, the no planes, the impossible speed arguments, the you know, the energy beam arguments, you know, Dr. Judy Woods puts forward. We see just recently, it was only maybe 6 months ago, that Jesse Ventura came out on the Alex Jones show and said that he's now thinking that it was directed energy weapons from space that took out the buildings. So they don't seem to go away, but can, do they?
No, they don't, and there's a lot of good reasons for it, or a lot of reasons. I don't know if they're good reasons, but that's something we can talk about.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, is that why we got the page to not come in today, end quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lives, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning? And if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the murder bubble? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. We're with Ken Jenkins. We're just running up to the top of the hour in the last segment with Ken. We're talking about 9/11 today, and we're talking about, disunity in the movement, some crazy theories that don't die, and a few interesting psychological aspects of social movements and what they do to really self-destruct and damage themselves. Ken, just before we went to the break, we were talking about this Vancouver hearings that's coming up. 1 year after the Toronto hearings, it was very successful getting a very concise and factual view of the 9/11 events, trying to project our movement forward into the history books as something that's based on evidence and rational thinking. Now we've got the opposite. We've got something similar that happened many years back. I can't remember the name of the conference now. Madison, that's right. It was in Madison, that Jim Fetzer also ran, that was really all about the controversial evidence and about the theories that are on the outer limit of possibility. Why do you think these keep coming back, and what do you think of this conference?
Well, Vancouver is kind of a replay of Madison, and a lot of the same people involved. And yeah, the appeal of the exotic theories is something I talked about way back in Chandler, Arizona, and I think that was 07, as that was starting to become more and more of a problem that long ago. And I think a part of the motivation is nothing more exotic than boredom, that people, you know, have heard of nanothermite and they've heard of the demolitions, and it's being covered in great detail by architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth and many other scholarly papers and so forth. And it's kind of old news. And some people have a tendency to get bored and get restless and want something new, something interesting, something exciting to keep them stimulated. And I think James Pessers is one of those that likes a lot of toys to play with and likes a lot of exciting and exotic things to play with. So these theories that are called fringe or exotic type theories, they appeal to that part of us, kind of the inner child part of us that wants exciting, stimulating toys to play with and is bored with the old toys. And that doesn't make them legitimate theories, and it certainly doesn't make them theories that once they're disproven and discounted, we should keep around, because they're ultimately very destructive, because they make us as a movement look like the very kind of conspiracy nuts that the other side wants us to look like. You know, they want us to look like a bunch of marginalized, crazy thinkers. And as long as we have these theories floating around, unfortunately, they have ammunition to back up that kind of an idea that we're just a bunch of conspiracy nuts. Now, when in the early days of the movement, there were not a lot of other trained engineers and scientists like and your listeners may know, I have an engineering degree, as I guess you do, John. And so there was a complaint at that time, oh, these people are claiming all this stuff like demolition, but they don't have any scientists, engineers, any architects to back them up. Well, along comes various of the scholarly organizations and science-based organizations and architects for, and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And there was great excitement and rejoicing within the movement because finally we had legitimacy, we had credibility, we had the kind of scientific backup to what we were saying that we were prior lacking. But what's ironic now is that here we are years later, we have far more science, far more scientists and engineers and architects. I think we're up to 1,700 signatures of architects and engineers. And so some of these scientists and engineers are looking at other issues like what happened at the Pentagon and trying to debunk the exotic theories like energy weapons at the towers and no planes and so forth, and have done a damn good job of it, what's more. And instead of everybody kind of getting behind that, as many of us are, instead there's a very strong contingent, unfortunately, of people who just can't go along with the science. They don't personally understand it, and they're not willing to take the word of the scientists and engineers and other qualified people who are speaking out on these things. And that's kind of odd and unfortunate. But it is, as I say, understandable in the sense of that science can get very boring to people that aren't scientifically trained. And when somebody comes along with something like, you know, a space beam brought down the towers, I mean, that's straight out of Star Wars and Star Trek. And this is exciting stuff. I mean, people spend big money to go see those movies and to get entertained. And so it really comes down to a kind of an entertainment thing of, you know, let's entertain these exotic theories because they're exciting and they're stimulating and they're new. So the
I've heard some people call it conspiracy porn, and this really does disgust me. It's making my stomach turn a little bit because there's some people that get involved in these things because they get titillated by them, and it really upsets me because obviously a lot of people died on 9/11, and it's an event that's caused many millions of deaths throughout the world, and the war on terror and the loss of civil liberties is such a serious matter. I'm nearly in tears just thinking about that people can consider this fun. But in actual fact, that's how they see it. And it was funny listening to Damon Crowe a couple of weeks back on this show talking about, you know, the way he sees things. You know, he said that he couldn't even pronounce it properly, but he was saying my catchphrase, you know, or the thing that I've always put at the bottom of my emails now for years is 9/11 24/7 until justice. And justice for the victims and justice so that we can find, you know, we can find the truth. With truth, we can have justice. With justice, we can have peace. And that's always been my aim, is try to work towards a world, a peaceful world, and a world where we can get justice for the victims of 9/11. Now, these people that take this as some sort of entertainment, it really does sicken me, but it's a true thing, and it does exist, doesn't it, Ken?
It does, although, you know, most people wouldn't necessarily cop to it. They wouldn't necessarily admit, oh, yeah, I find this entertaining. That would be, as you point out quite correctly, very disrespectful. But in reality, if you look at it from a psychological standpoint, you know, people do get bored and they do want entertained. You know, the entertainment industry is a multi-trillion-dollar industry. And so we're not immune to that. And so I think, as you say, it's millions of people, literally over a million people have died as a direct result of 9/11. And this is serious stuff. And I think we need to kind of, you know, handle our inner child that just wants to be entertained by anything that seems exciting. And get serious in the sense of, you know, science works and science has legitimacy. And it's worth respecting and taking seriously rather than just wanting to be entertained.
Yeah, exactly. Now, just briefly before we've only got a few minutes to go now, 4 or 5 minutes to go. With the Pentagon issue, not many people out there in the 9/11 Truth world are aware that there's 4 scientific papers on the matter now that have not been contested by pilots for 9/11 Truth or any other qualified people, like someone like Dwayne Dietz, that is actually ex-NASA he was in charge of projects there and quite a distinguished man. Dwayne Dietz is actually talking at the Vancouver conference, and I'm sure he'll be proposing that the flyover is, you know, possible or probable. I don't know what sort of words he's going to use, but I think that's probably what he's going to be aiming at. Now, obviously, why isn't someone like Dwayne Dietz or Pilots for Truth or any of these other educated proponents of flyover theories or no planes putting forward proper scientific papers so that, you know, we can go through the proper process of rebuttal and review, just like we do with the Journal of 9/11 Studies?
Well, that's a darn good question, John, particularly in light of these papers, which, as you say, so few people seem to pay any attention to, so few seem to have read. A lot of them aren't even aware that they exist, so that's just internal communication faults there. But these papers, I've seen them. I've read most of them. They're excellent, first-rate papers. I don't agree with every word in every paper, but I certainly agree with the majority of the thrust of them. I think most of the science in there is valid. And these things need to be read. They need to be taken seriously, and if there are people like Dwayne Dietz or anybody who dispute them, they have to do it on the basis of science, and they have to be able to dispute them. They can't just ignore them. That's not science. So this is a very valid question, and I'm glad you bring it up so we can make at least our listeners aware of these papers and have them go online and read them themselves, form their own opinions. This is important work that's being done, and it's being done on the one topic of all of the ones we've discussed that's perhaps the most controversial and the most long-lasting. As you pointed out, the disputes about what did or didn't happen at the Pentagon started very early on. And with the lack of evidence that we had back then, many of us, including myself, jumped on to looks like no plane hit the Pentagon. Until we started looking deeper at it and looked at some of the more some more evidence came along and there was a more of an analysis, and then for me personally it became a question of I went from pushing one point of view to back to being an agnostic so that I could continue to be a researcher, because if you've drawn a strong conclusion, especially on something as controversial as what did or didn't hit the Pentagon, there's a tendency to kind of drop science and drop being a researcher and start being an advocate. And I heard myself doing that. And so I stepped back, became agnostic, and quit being an advocate so I could be a researcher again. And what's interesting about the Pentagon question of what did or didn't hit it or could have flown over or whatever is that you can make the case either way. There's a lot of evidence both ways. And what I've noticed that most people do is they present only one side. And I used to spend a lot of time on a website, unfortunately isn't up anymore, called Pentagon Research, where they did present both sides. And they did point out that this strange anomaly that, and it's also pointed out in the third Loose Change Final Cut, that there is evidence for both sides of it. And I happen to believe, become convinced, that the other side is using it to as part of their divide and conquer and kind of fueling controversy.
We've only got just 30 seconds left now, but anyway, I just encourage everyone to go to the Journal of 9/11 Studies, and you can just Google that, Journal of 9/11 Studies, and read some of the papers there and take a second look at the Pentagon. Obviously, it looks very strange, but anyway, it's a very divisive issue, but I take Ken's position on it. We don't really know what happens, but on the evidence now, as time has gone by, it looks more and more likely that a big plane did hit the Pentagon. Anyway, we'll be back after the hour. I'm hoping Ken will stay with us to join David Chandler. Okay, so we'll see you then.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. 651-0102 or visit us online at bfa.org.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.
Pressure. We usually associate it with stress and negativity, but sometimes a bit of pressure can be healing. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to tell you how conditions like nausea can be cured using the traditional Chinese therapy known as acupressure.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Acupressure is an ancient practice that uses finger or hand pressure to cure everything from headaches to constipation. The pressure is applied to points known as meridians that are believed to control the flow of energy in the human body. Acupressure offers a simple cure for nausea you might try the next time you get a queasy stomach or a case of motion sickness. Simply apply moderate pressure to the point known as P6. You'll find it on the inside of your wrist, about two fingers width down from your palm. Placing pressure on the P6 point works on the same principle as those pricey anti-nausea wristbands, but this relief is free and always on hand. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com. It's alive. It's huge. It's enormous. And it covers nearly 2,000 football fields. Is it an invader from outer space? Nope. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back in just a moment to tell you about the biggest living thing ever found on Earth.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
The biggest living organism on Earth is a fungi. Not a fun guy, but a honey mushroom, Armillaria ostiae, to be exact. And it's so big, it's nicknamed the monster. This big boy started out as a microscopic spore 2,400 years ago, but now inhabits 2,000 acres of the Mahler National Forest in eastern Oregon. It stretches 3.5 miles and reaches depths of 3 feet. Though it murders trees in its path, it's a treat for mushroomers armed with knives and forks. Foragers and connoisseurs are wild about the earthy taste of honey mushrooms. I've even cooked them myself, Russian style, with onions and sour cream. They're great on pierogies, especially really big ones. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin, and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favorite podcatcher.
Welcome back to the second hour of Truth News Radio Australia, being broadcast live throughout the US on the Logos Radio Network. You're with John Bursell, your guest host this week, as Harold Fenton is busy with work commitments. And today we've had two excellent guests make themselves available, and David Chandler has just joined us. But I just wanted to go back to Ken Jenkins briefly. He's going to stay with us in the hour and talk about something that David's actually directly involved in and is actually in this film. Ken, could you tell us about the Toronto Hearings films and the reduced format that is now available for sale?
Yeah, absolutely. Just recently, the DVD of the Toronto hearings was released. It's available now online. You can just Google it. It'll pop up. And what they've done is they've condensed that rather lengthy hearing down to something between 5 and 6 hours. And they got all the superstars on here, David Ray Griffin, Richard Gage, David Chandler, Kevin Ryan, Neils Herit, goes on and on. So I strongly suggest you check that out. It's reasonably priced, and and you can get some of the more solid evidence all in one place that way.
Excellent. That sounds great. And okay, we'll leave you there for a little while. Ken, we might call you back in the next segment. David, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, it's great to be talking to you again, David. I know I surprised you today with a phone call, last minute guest. I got asked to host this show just a few days back, and I just had a shoulder reconstruction 1 week ago. So you can imagine my life's been a little bit unusual. I originally planned to have Richard Gage on to talk about his tour, but we're hoping to get him back next week. He's actually on the podium at the moment speaking, so he wasn't able to make it. But I thought what better guest to have on as we were talking about the Toronto hearings and also the not-so-good Vancouver hearings that are coming up that we were talking about previously with Ken. And, I just thought it'd be great to get you on off the back of me being called an agent on this show 2 shows back because of my strict adherence to factual and well-supported evidence, which is quite strange. But I know you've suffered the same thing. But anyway, anyone that doesn't know who David Chandler is, I've described him as the wisest scientist that we have in the movement. He seems to me to be someone that's able to simplify the physics of 9/11 and bring it to the common man, and to do it in a very calm and a very measured way that's really made him someone that is extremely important for the movement, especially in our public opinion. Because when people see someone like David speaking, they realise he's a very reasonable man and a very well-considered man. And obviously David has been involved in some productions, mostly on YouTube, which were very successful, and a DVD that he produced that was called 9/11 Analysis with David Chandler. And I suggest anyone that's interested in the physics of 9/11 check that out. And also, check out some of the work David's done more recently on the controversial issue of the Pentagon that we were talking about in the previous hour as well. Now, David, what have you been up to?
Well, you might want to mention the website. I have a website that I do with John Cole. And it's,
yes.
It's 911speakout.org. And I have my collection of, I put a lot of stuff out on little short YouTube blips so that they're easily digestible, pretty much single topic little videos. And John Cole, I teamed up with because he's done a lot of experimental work that pretty much fits hand in glove with things I've done. And so I invited him to share the space. So we do that website together.
And it's an excellent resource. I've been there many times, and some people might or might not be aware that you were one of the people that enabled us to get the admittance from NIST that Building 7 did actually fall at free fall at 9.81 meters per second. You and Dr. Stephen Jones were the ones that were primarily responsible for that great addition to our body of facts that we could present to the public.
Well, they were trying to promote what's obviously a lie. I mean, anybody who watches Building 7 falls knows that it's coming down, if not at free fall, very, very close to it. And in fact, if you measure it, it's coming down at free fall. And they were trying to claim in their preliminary report that it was coming down 40% slower than free fall, but a lot of hand-waving kinds of arguments. And it's so blatant that there was a technical briefing that I was enabled to get onto that, and I was able to pose a question, and then Stephen Jones posed a similar question, just very, very straightforward. And how can you claim something that's so blatant is pretty much what it was. The video of that hearing is on the website, and just listening to Shamsunder and John Gross in their responses, I think pretty much anybody who has any kind of sense of people knows they're lying just from their mannerism, just trying to answer such a simple, simple question. And in fact, they evade answering the simple questions. So they were the stars of that little show in how they blew it. I mean, how can you say that something is coming down? If you drop something from one hand to the other, that's free fall rate. That's free fall acceleration. And if you try to claim that that's 40% slower than free fall, and anybody in their right mind can tell that that's not true, you know? And that's pretty much how blatant it was.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that was a great breakthrough and something so simple for anyone to understand. Now, anyway, that aside, the point of today's last-minute interview, I'm sorry to really get you on the hop, is that the Vancouver hearings are coming up, and obviously if you go to their site, you can find out about it. There were some people that weren't happy with the Toronto hearings and that also aren't happy with the consensus panel that we've brought together in the 9/11 Truth Movement to try to narrow our focus at the things that we can really prove beyond a shadow of a doubt and that would hold up in court. Now, they're saying their aim is not to belittle the Toronto hearings. On the contrary, we appreciate the efforts of those who organised the Toronto hearings and agree that the overall evidence presented there does amount to a convincing case against the US government version of what happened on 9/11. But basically what they're trying to do at the Vancouver hearings is to look at all the material you scholarly folks at the Toronto hearings decided was not so strong and was probably more likely to do damage to our public standing as a scientific movement and as a movement based in evidence. Now, they've made some thinly veiled attacks against yourself and others that spoke at the conference saying that you're limiting yourself to science that is maybe not accurate because there's science that we don't know about. They're trying to make the argument that there's new technologies that could have been used and things that having a strong position about thermite and other things and, the demolition of the buildings, we're actually limiting ourselves and our ability to prove our case. Now, I think that's ridiculous personally. But I'd just like to see your view on what you think the Toronto hearings achieved and whether they should have gone down into the murky waters of making arguments, no planes at the Pentagon, no planes at the towers, and that, some sort of energy beam or weapon was used to take down the towers. What's your view of the Toronto hearing and what the Vancouver hearings are trying to do?
Well, I was very flattered to be invited to the Toronto hearings. That was the best group of researchers on the subject that I've been in the company of. And I've people that I've been literally working closely with for several years, I met for the first time there. And so we were able to talk at length, go out and have dinner together and so forth, and really get to know each other on a different basis. So it was on a personal level, it was like, this was my opportunity, and a lot of us, it was our opportunity to really come together and know who it is we've been working with. It was a reunion, even though we hadn't met before. I mean, it was amazing, but it was just a continuing of the conversation. So that's on the personal side. In terms of what was happening at the hearings themselves, I was there on the third day, and that was the day that all of the science evidence was presented that was relevant to the towers destruction and so forth. So Graham McQueen, who's a professor, he's actually a religion professor in Canada, who I guess specializes in Buddhism, but he is an amazing person to listen to. Took it on as a project. There was like 10,000 pages of eyewitness testimony from first responders after the building collapses in New York. And the fire department took down, gave them an opportunity to tell what they saw and what their observations were. And this was locked away from public view for a couple of years And then it was released on, I believe, a Freedom of Information Act by the New York Times or some group like that got it released. And then he took it and went through and combed it for testimony of explosions. And he had a strong criteria for what constituted testimony of explosions. And it was, if you have a chance to listen to that, it's an amazing piece of work. And I followed that with talking about Building 7. And I brought together a lot of what I've said about Building 7 in the past, but some new material as well that I had garnered. And I've been corresponding with somebody named Jeremy Hammond, who put out a paper about the way NIST was doing their observations. And this was an opportunity to see, to understand more clearly the depths of their lie. It was clearly a lie, yeah, the way they presented it. And to understand exactly how they manufactured the lie became clear. I can come back to that in a minute. But following mine was John Cole, who brought out the experimental evidence that he's been working on, the experimental simulations of the events, trying to show that, in fact, thermite could be used to cut beams and columns, and this is something that had been poo-pooed by some of these debunkers trying to say, oh, you can't even burn through the roof of a car with thermite, which is clearly false. He burned
exactly just, you know, just 45 seconds running up to the break, David, if you could just, yeah, wrap up that point.
Well, okay, and then Niels Herrett finished up today. Kevin Ryan spoke, but then Niels Herrett came up and talked at length about the nanothermite evidence and brought out new evidence as well at the time. So anyway, that was day three. That was the day I participated in. The other days of the hearing focused on other topics, but it was a great event. And I really recommend people get the DVD and listen to it.
Excellent. Well, we'll join you back in just a few minutes. We're just heading off to the break. Now you're with Truth News Radio Australia.
Capital Coin and Bullion is a family-owned business built on the promise to bring you affordable pricing on all coin and bullion products. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer storable freeze-dried foods produced by Augustin Farms, ammunition at 10% above wholesale prices, Berkey water products, gift certificates, and our silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals, give appraisals, and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 2. Visit us at capitalcoinandbullion.com or call 512-646-6440 and say you heard about us on Rule of Law Radio or Texas Liberty Radio.
What's been the problem with phone companies? High prices and contracts that lock you in for 2 years minimum. Not FreedomTelephones.com. Freedom Telephones are designed around the concept and reality of patriotism, loyalty, and privacy. With FreedomTelephones.com, there are no contracts, no credit checks, and no social security numbers required. That's why our name is FreedomTelephones.com. Finally, residential, mobile, and business telephones and plans that are private and never lock you into a long-term contract. Want a low price? Residential and business plans start at only $14.99, and mobile plans start at just $39.99. Plus, every month you pay your bill, FreedomTelephones.com contributes to your favorite programs. Don't wait. Support the cause and get the highest quality and the lowest prices by calling 1-800-600-5553. That's 800-600-5553. FreedomTelephones.com. Portable. Private. Perfect.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. You're on the Logos Radio Network, live across the US. We're with David Chandler, physicist and 9/11 truth advocate. And we're just talking about the Toronto hearings. David was just going through the third day of the hearings when the scientific evidence about the towers was presented. And he was just rounding up the notes that he could remember from the presentation by Dr. Niels Harrit, expert in nanotechnology, about the nanothermite findings. Please continue, David.
Okay, I just want to round that out a little bit. One of the things that Niels presented that was actually, it was new to all of us, or at least to most of us, there was something else found in the dust, but it was really first found by doctors looking at lung tissue from first responders. I don't know if it's from autopsies or biopsies or what, but they've discovered little tiny structures called carbon nanotubes. And these are, you know how asbestos is fibrous and it gets trapped in the lungs and it can become carcinogenic and create other kinds of problems. But these carbon nanotubes are very, very strong little fibery structures at the nanoscale, very tiny. And these are not normally found in ordinary fires, but they are found in the lungs of the first responders on 9/11. Secondly, he pointed out that these nanotubes have been found in the dust. And the third point was that Kevin Ryan, who's a chemist, collaborated with Niels, and Kevin actually synthesized some nanothermite using a recipe from Lawrence Livermore and reacted it. And they found, he sent it to Niels, and Niels found carbon nanotubes in the reacted nanothermite. So all of the parts of the puzzle are there. He presented it as preliminary result, but it's very interesting to me because this is one result that could potentially bring the first responders into the movement once they realize how close the people that are dying, the relationship between their cause of their illness and what was going on in the towers. So I thought that was an amazing way to cap off the day.
Of course. Now, some people have been some people have been recently saying that, you know, nanothermite, you know, it's not really that strong or evidence, you know, we're like, come on, you know, couldn't really bring down the buildings. No one has ever said that nanothermite, thermite or any of these other products that, you know, obviously iron, iron and aluminium, basically, you've got iron oxide and aluminium powder, very, very fine in the nanothermite realm, is responsible for bringing down the towers completely. No one has ever said that. This investigation is all around finding something in the dust that just shouldn't be there, and it's there in large quantities, and it's explosive thermitic material. Now, that's really all we've ever tried to do with this thermite evidence is to say, why is it there? And let's find out, you know. No one's ever said that it was completely responsible for bringing down the towers. And talking to Niels, which I've met in person, I actually held an event for Niels here in Sydney, and also talking to yourself and many of the other people involved, including Dr. Frank Legg, who's a close personal friend of mine, is that, you know, we don't really know exactly what this material is used for. We just know it shouldn't be there, and we want to find out why it's there. Is that right?
Well, it was there. It was there in large quantities, and there's no business for it to be there. All the business that they talk about how aluminum and rust are present, and therefore that accounts for it, that completely, it's a whitewash of the fact that this is clearly a very high-tech manufactured material. For it to be in the fine grain sizes, it's like a hundredth the size of a red blood cell. If you've ever looked at a red blood cell under a microscope, go a hundredth of that size, and that's how big the particles are. And they're very finely intermixed at that level and bonded into a matrix that's sort of a hydrocarbon material. And this is, it was clearly put there. It was all over the place. And then the iron spheres that were also found throughout the dust, little tiny spheres of iron, which are like droplets of iron that's been molten and then solidified before it hit the ground. And it's like a mist. All of that points to...
So we know it was used to melt steel. That's really all we know, isn't it? We know that it was used to melt steel on the day. The byproduct is iron. We have the actual material. We have the byproducts of the material. But we don't know exactly how it was used, and we're not saying that it was what brought down the towers. I don't think anyone involved with the nanothermite paper of the nine authors has any exact description of what it was used for. I know Stephen Jones said it could have been used for wicks. It could have been used for cutting. Yourself, you've probably theorised about a few things as well. But there's no set position from any of you scientists involved with this paper on exactly how it was used, is there?
Well, that's true. There's it could be used in various ways. For the people that are trying to disparage the nanothermite evidence, it's a non-conventional, it's not usually used as an explosive. At least thermite is not usually used as an explosive. This nanothermite is new. It can be used as an explosive. It can be used as a very fast-reacting, high-temperature incendiary. It can be used in various ways. And so whether it was used in conjunction with something else or not, the fact that it was there is the smoking gun as far as I'm concerned. We don't necessarily have to know exactly how they used it. If you find a gun at a crime scene, maybe that was or maybe that wasn't the gun that was used, but what's the gun doing there with the perpetrator's fingerprints all over it? You know, and so that's going to be brought in. So that's sort of the level here. It's something that it does have fingerprints of the perpetrators all over it. It's something that is manufactured only in very high-tech military industrial kinds of labs. It's not on the open market. It's not used commercially. It's used in the military. And so the fact that they even had availability of large quantities of this to be used in the buildings has fingerprints on it. It's like when they discovered when they were trying to say that the I go blank. You know the little virus. Okay.
Sorry. Say again.
Yeah, the stuff they sent around in the letters to the congressmen and all that. Just
The anthrax. Sorry, the anthrax. Yeah. So anthrax. Jim Fetzer was saying about nanothermite while you were talking. Yeah. Sorry. The anthrax. Yeah, we know where that came from, don't we?
They were trying to say the anthrax. Oh, that points to Saddam Hussein. But no, it turns out that the genetics of the anthrax in the samples pointed right back to the military labs, and some of those same military labs are involved in nanothermite research. So I mean, it's like there are fingerprints all over this material and all over the whole event. So you don't need to know the exact sequence of what did they blow up first and everything else to really know the nature of the event. And I think that's what we're saying, is that it's much safer to rely on things that you really know. And from there, we might speculate on other things. Sure, maybe there are exotic weapons that we don't know about. But hey, we don't know about them. So why make that the center of your focus? If we stick with what we do know, there's plenty there to prove our point.
Yeah, well, certain people in the fringe of the 9/11 truth movement, the people that support the flyover theory of the Pentagon and support directed energy weapons, et cetera, are saying that the nanothermite argument and paper could be the Achilles heel of the 9/11 truth movement. That's actually in some text on the Vancouver hearing page there. If you read down through it, saying it could be the Achilles heel of the movement, I absolutely can see no reason, no logical reason for making any such silly statement, because there's no Achilles heel analogy, because it's something that's found, it's something that's been proven, it's something been written about, published, examined by multiple people. There's many different sources of it. We know it exists. We're not trying to say exactly what it did. We're just saying it shouldn't be there. We want to know why it's there. And that's impossible to be an Achilles heel. And what they're trying to say by the looks of this Vancouver hearing is that the Pentagon is being left behind by us, the rational, reasonable section of the 9/11 truth movement, because we know the evidence is pointing at most likely a plane did hit there. Most of us aren't really sure, but we know the evidence is very, very thin, trying to prove that no plane hit there. Well, actually, I don't think there's any evidence that no plane hit there, and I think the four papers that have been produced demonstrate that. They're saying that, you know, we're missing out on the big opportunity to break the 9/11 story worldwide with the Pentagon and the flyover, but we're limiting ourselves and cornering ourselves, you know, an Achilles heel type position with the nanothermite paper. Now, doesn't sound very smart to me. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's crazy, and I'll be glad to talk about how crazy it really is when I get back. That's fine.
No worries.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
The Rule of Law Radio Network is proud to present a due process of law seminar hosted by our own Eddie Craig. Eddie is a former Nacogdoches Sheriff's Deputy, and for the past 21 years he's been studying the due process of law and now offers his knowledge to you at a seminar every Sunday from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock at Brave New Books, located at 1904 Guadalupe Street. Admission is $20, so please make plans to come by and sit with Eddie and learn for yourself what the true intent of law really is.
At HempUSA.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, Micro Plant Powder. Our Micro Plant Powder is rich in iodine, probiotics, zinc, and silica to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Micro Plant Powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
You are listening to the Logos Radio Network. LogosRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception, and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
The man who stole the water will swim forevermore, but he'll never reach the land on that.
Okay, welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia with David Chandler, and Ken Jenkins now has come back on the line, and we're just talking about the evidence of nanothermite and the solid evidence, and how there's a group of people now with the Vancouver hearings trying to bring the wackier, the nuttier type information back into the realm of 9/11 truth movement, and make an argument that the nanothermite paper could be the Achilles heel of the 9/11 truth movement. I'm just going to let David talk here, and I hope Ken gets involved in the discussion.
Okay. The idea that the nanothermite is somehow an Achilles heel, it's first of all, that's a crazy statement. The nanothermite discovery in the dust is solid science. The stuff that they found, it has the chemical signature of nanothermite. It has under electron microscope, it has the structure. You can see the particles. And it has, they put it in a chamber where they were able to heat it up until it reacted, and it gives off an energy profile is very comparable to known samples of nanothermite that have been manufactured in the, like Lawrence Livermore and so forth. So it's solid evidence. It was collected on the spot before cleanup operations began. They've done very thorough. The paper itself is, even though it's a scientific paper, it's actually readable by an intelligent layman. So you might, you know, some people might trip over some of the words here and there, but if there's actually a simplified version of it. If you go to my website, which is 911speakout.org, and there's a page with links and things, I have a link to the paper itself. You really need to read it and just skim through it and see the degree of self-evident, I mean, how well this thing has been researched out. They don't have a lot of wiggle room in there. This stuff really is what they say it is. Now, there are people who are trying to get these speculative theories going, especially on the Pentagon. Most of the scientists in the truth movement, there's a group called Scientists for 9/11 Truth, and there is debate over the Pentagon. But the debate ranges from basically establishing that a plane really did hit the Pentagon, which I, Frank Legg, and various others are confident that a plane really did it, and it's a plane that fits the description of American Airlines Flight 77. So it could well be the exact plane that the official story says. So there is lots of evidence, physical evidence, radar evidence, there's a flight data recorder, eyewitness testimony, and so forth. It all comes together and says that. However, not everyone is convinced by that. The other wing in the science, among the science community in this movement, is to say, we really, really need to keep our focus off the Pentagon because there's so many uncertainties there. And both sides of this debate, if you want to call it that, are concerned that the real solid evidence is at the World Trade Center. That's where we have overwhelming evidence of the nature of this operation that occurred on 9/11. So people who are trying to put the entire, trying to go off on some other thing, say, oh, well, there were more exotic weapons used. You ask them what they were. Oh, we're not sure, but there must have been something. I'll grant you that the military is experimenting with exotic weapons. I've heard lots of stories about this, and I believe that might be true. But I can't do anything with that. That's not useful information. And so I'm not going to go there and try to base my understanding of 9/11 on something that I really don't have access to. And as long as there's so much evidence that you really can have access to that's so straightforward, why go off on the fringes? That's my point on that. Did you have any comments, Ken?
Yeah, that's basically my position too, David. I voiced in the first hour that we have so much solid evidence on every aspect of 9/11. I mean, even including the Pentagon. I mean, the fact that the Pentagon was hit at all is a smoking gun. That the the alleged pilot was unlikely to be able to fly that trajectory and so forth. I mean, it goes on and on. The part of the Pentagon they hit. There's so much evidence that we all agree on. I make a list of it. I don't have it all handy of all the stuff we agree on about the Pentagon, let alone these other things. And the point is, in terms of a public face, which you would think and hope something like the Vancouver hearings would be, to stick to the stuff that we agree on, that there's consensus on, not necessarily perfect consensus, but there's a general agreement on a number of points. Including virtually everything you've said today, that's strategically that's the stuff to put out there. And beyond that, we can speculate privately, but it's not something that we should be putting on the public record because it kind of makes us look like the very kind of nuts that the other side would, wants us to look like.
Yeah, it definitely just has the feel that there are people out there trying to stir the pot and trying in a sense, the bigger of splash they can make with something, all this non-verifiable stuff, the more they're going to keep the entire endeavor in, to be discredited. And one has to wonder what's going on. Is that, in fact, a conscious motive? You know, if you think of it this way, we really are it's very clear from all the evidence that it was high-level government agencies that had to have been involved in this. And that's not just, jumping at a conspiracy theory. That's what That's like what I talked about, the fingerprints on this nanothermite. That's who's being pointed to by the way the buildings were taken down and the level of planning, the level of coordination. You had to coordinate with the flights. You had to coordinate with the military to not shoot down the flights and all these war games that were going on. The level of coordination seems just practically endless. This is a huge government-level institutional operation, and it's clear. And so if there really is something of that magnitude, you have to know that there is going to be an attempt to cause any, if we really are getting close to any kind of ability to persuade the public otherwise, to persuade the public that that's really what's going on, they're going to attempt to disrupt that. And so I can't just flat out come out and make an accusation that any particular person is intentionally disrupting this process, but it sure feels that way. And so I don't know, I don't want to point fingers, but there are definitely people who have done very little except to stir the pot. If you look at their websites, they point all over the place, but they don't point at the good research that's been done. They don't.
Yeah,
point
in fact,
at,
they tend to. Yeah, and in fact, they often point against some of the solid research, which is suspicious.
Yeah.
I agree with you totally, David, that the actions that are being taken are similar to, virtually identical to, what we would call a disinfo agent. But that we shouldn't be pointing fingers at them. I spoke at this at length the first hour, so I won't repeat it. But the point is that it's understandable why some people would think that other people in the movement are disinfo agents when they're having the same impact. They're causing two phenomenons to occur, one of which is divide and conquer, creating a lot of dissension within the movement. And the second is to put out marginal ideas, which tend to marginalize the whole movement. And as long as they persist in those two to have that kind of impact, the accusations will go on. I personally, as I said in the first part, I don't actually think most or hardly any of these people are agents. I think they are self-serving, that they're doing these things for their own personal reasons. In terms of getting an audience and getting a following and having fun stuff to talk about. I even talked about the boredom factor in the early segment, because few of any of them are scientists and they don't understand the science. That stuff gets boring to them. But when you talk about something like a space ray, now you're talking science fiction, and that's exciting, stimulating stuff. I think that's a lot of the problem right there.
Could I just interrupt for a sec, guys, just to give you something to talk about? This is their mission. It says the Vancouver hearings, which is actually on this coming weekend, our mission to expand the boundaries of 9/11 truth. So that's what they're trying to do.
Well, I think boundaries are created by science, and David, you probably want to speak to that.
No, they're discounting. I've seen some of these people who are involved in this hearing. And they're discounting the good science that has been done, and they're trying to, create a stir. It's just amazing to watch the process. I really recommend that the hearers of this program go look at the stuff we've done. If you want something that's understandable and clear and convincing, who needs excitement beyond that? I mean, it's not exciting. This is a horrific event. And I know why go for titillation when you can actually go for something that we're looking at the nature of, like, who's the power behind the throne in this country? There's something going on at a pretty deep level that's scary. And there's plenty of...
We're talking about revolution, that's right. And we're just coming up to the end of the break. We'll see you again.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself.
thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. Jurisdictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
It is so enlightening to listen to 90.1 FM, but finding things on the internet isn't so easy, and neither is finding like-minded people to share it with.
Oh, well, I guess you haven't heard of Brave New Books then.
Brave New Books?
Yes, Brave New Books has all the books and DVDs you're looking for by authors like Alex Jones, Ron Paul, and G. Edward Griffin. They even stock Interfood, Berkey products, and Calvin soaps.
There's no way a place like that exists.
Go check it out for yourself. It's downtown at 1904 Guadalupe Street, just south of UT.
Oh, by UT, there's never anywhere to park down there.
Actually, they now offer a free hour of parking for paying customers at the 500 MLK parking facility, just behind the bookstore.
It does exist, but when are they open?
Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and 1 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. So give them a call at 512-480-2503 or check out their events page at bravenewbookstore.com.
To the final section of this two-hour presentation. I'm your guest host, John Bursell. This is Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting live across the US. We're with David Chandler, physicist, and Ken Jenkins, filmmaker and engineer. We're just talking about the 9/11 Truth Movement and how it's getting a little bit off the tracks at the moment. And we're just talking about how important it is that we stick to the good evidence and the factual information. And we were just getting onto the point then. I'm going to let you guys continue. How disgusting it is for some of us that people have fun with conspiracies, and how there's some people out there that are professional conspiracy people. And I'm not saying that Jim Fetzer's anything but what he says he is, but he's someone that's been involved in the conspiracy, you know, theorist movement and money-making escapade right from day one. And I believe he was involved, and Ken might know about this, with the JFK movement, and caused a lot of trouble disputing the Zapata film.
Yeah, that's so. Fetzer's been up to his tricks for a long time in terms of he's also created a lot of dissension and disunity within the Kennedy assassination movement, if you want to call it that. So it's the same pattern.
I want to say that one of the things that concerns me tremendously in all of this is the uniformity with which the good science that we have put together about what happened on 9/11 has been so thoroughly excluded from the mainstream media. It's excluded from any kind of legitimate conversation. I just got done collaborating with a couple of engineers and a couple of others on an article that we submitted to the Journal of Structural Engineering. And in response to a NIST paper that was just put out, we made a very strong case that what NIST was saying was false and so forth. And just as we were submitting that, Tony Zambodi, who was working on another response paper a year ago, said that they submitted practically exactly a year ago. They just got a notice from the Journal of Engineering, Mechanical Engineering, that Journal of Engineering Mechanics, whatever the name of it is, they just rejected the paper on very flimsy grounds. And it's like, so if you can't, they say, well, you don't have published results, and then they don't let these results be discussed. These are not flimsy articles. These are solid. And we have teams of engineers and scientists who are submitting these papers, and they don't publish them. And so if the journals don't publish them, and if the mainstream news won't talk about it, and every time it's mentioned in the news, it's referred to as conspiracy theory. There's a consolidated effort to keep this on the level of not being a legitimate level of inquiry. And one of the things that bothers me is this was understandable to me during the Bush administration, because it was during the Bush administration that this stuff was happening. 9/11 is what made the Bush administration. Everything he did harkened back to 9/11 constantly, if you recall. But it's been carried on in the Obama administration as well. And that's because the same forces are at work behind the government, the same economic forces, the oil companies and so forth. People want these wars. People are profiting from these wars incredibly. People want to redesign the map of the Middle East and so forth. There are people out there who want this kind of tyrannical power within our country. And we like to think of ourselves as a democracy, but we're certainly not behaving that way. And to exclude evidence of malfeasance of government agencies on such a systematic basis, I guess it's to be expected, but the fact that it's happening now as well as during the Bush administration tells me that it's a deeper problem than just Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and these guys who were in charge at the time. It goes very deep, and it's an ongoing thing that tells me that we have a huge problem on our hands. We need to re-engineer our society, and you might want to call that a revolution or whatever, but the point is we need to change our society. Look at these, this 1% versus 99% movement, you know, the Occupy movement. They're getting another piece of the puzzle here. There's these financial powers at work that are distorting our supposed democracy. They're distorting it beyond recognition. And this is where, you know, the 9/11 issue literally is the tip of the iceberg. And 9/11 is horrendous. But the wars that we have perpetrated in the name of 9/11, we have literally killed well over a million people in the Middle East. And this has been studied repeatedly by legitimate scholarly research. And there's, you know, to kill that many people in it has no relation to what was happening on 9/11. This is something that's taken on a life of its own. And nobody will talk about 9/11 because nobody wants to rock the boat on allowing the agenda to continue moving forward. So if you want a conspiracy theory, look at what people are doing with 9/11. And this is where I think this has to lead. We can't always just look back to what happened on that day and focus on just those 3,000 or so people. It's something that has grown to be a monster, that was just the opening salvo. So
absolutely. I mean, we live in a post 9/11 world. That's the reality, and it includes the wars, and it includes the loss of civil liberties, and on, and that's the impact of the day. Another way to sum up what you just said, David, which was I thought excellent, is the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us against is the conspiracy, in a sense. Those powers that want war, as you say, have conspired to keep us at war, have been successful at it. And with 9/11, they got the ultimate excuse to keep us at war, as they have warned us, for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. And for those that find that unacceptable, 9/11 truth opens the door to a solution.
I want to plug a book here. I want to plug a book here that does not have to do with 9/11, except in the sense it has everything to do with 9/11. This is about JFK. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable. And Google that. Look it up on Amazon or something. It's incredible. It's talking about the politics.
It's a great book, yeah.
Huh? Yeah,
it's a great book.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said it's a great book.
Yes, it's a great book. It talks about the whole political environment of the Kennedy administration that led to his overthrow. And it makes no bones about the fact it was blatantly again, a similar inside operation by security agencies. It was a coup. And you just got to read the book. It is so clear the kinds of things that work. And those same kinds of processes are going on another level today. And I, if anybody wants to understand 9/11, look at the science. Look at the this is a good insight into the politics that's behind it, and look at the go back and review what was going on in the Bush administration. It's amazing how quickly people, you know, history fades from view. The Bush administration was
for sure. And another great book, Family of Secrets, which is, you know, an excellent read as well, and it really goes into that deep history of families and their, you know, gangster-like infiltration throughout different networks. Like Ken and I say, we see 9/11 as being done by a symbiosis of of criminal elements, you know, including the intelligence agencies, at least at some extent. Yeah. Now, I'm just finishing up. We've just got a few minutes left. I'm really worried that maybe the only conference we're going to have every year now is something that's put on by Jim Fetzer, because the 9/11 truth movement, at least in Australia and some parts of the world, has sort of come to a bit of an end after the 10th anniversary. What can we do if the only regular conference we have is someone presenting exotic theories and really making a joke of us all?
Well,
I understand your concern, John, and it is a concern. I think that one of the challenges we have with the 9/11 truth movement always have is that it's a very long-term project. We're already a decade in, and maybe we're halfway. And we have to look at other long-term movements, say the women's right to vote lasted many decades, to get a picture of how these things have a sort of a natural organic process of growth. And one of them is, you know, there are times that the changes seem like a step backwards, but they're not necessarily that. They're simply a change in the strategy and the landscape and the actions that people are taking. The truth is we've reached millions of people. We have changed hearts and minds, and we continue to every day. And we just have to find new ways of doing that. Conferences may not be the best, and I don't think Fester's going to continue to do a lot of conferences, so I don't think that's necessarily a risk.
So you think that's just in rebuttal to the Toronto hearings narrow? It's like the small tent versus the big tent, so now that we had the small tent where we had the good hard science, now he's sort of giving everyone else a platform for the big tent ideas.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. And, you know, Toronto did do the job it did, and it's hard to top that, so they're doing something very different. But the good news is that if you look at what happened after the Madison conference, which was very similar, it didn't have hardly any impact. It didn't really change anything that much.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, anyway, it's been really great having you both on the show, and thanks for coming on at short notice, David. Really appreciate it. Like I said, I was just filling in this week for Harrowood, and thanks, Ken. I've really enjoyed the podcast. I hope people out there will get something from it. Obviously, 9/11 is not something that we're talking about on this radio show every week anymore. It was the beginning of this show, Truth News Radio Australia. Really was born out of the 9/11 Truth Movement. But it's good to revisit it every now and then and look at what's going on in the movement. And, I'd just like to thank you all for coming on. And if you just want to quickly say some closing remarks, you've got about 30 seconds.
Well, keep up the good work, both of you.
Yeah, I guess my closing remark is go look at my website as a starting point. It's 911speakout.org, easy to remember. And I have links that point to lots of other good material there. And that would be a good way to get your feet wet.
And get a copy of the Toronto hearings when you get a chance.
Absolutely. Not to mention Chris Emery's new film, A Noble Lie, which really speaks of the same pattern of...
Bibles for America is offering absolutely free a unique study Bible called the New Testament Recovery Version. The New Testament Recovery Version has over 9,000 footnotes that explain what the Bible says verse by verse, helping you to know God and to know the meaning of life. Order your free copy today from Bibles for America. Call us toll free at 888-551-0102 or visit us online at bfa.org. This translation is highly accurate, and it comes with over 13,000 cross-references, plus charts and maps, and an outline for every book of the Bible. This is truly a Bible you can understand. To get your free copy of the New Testament Recovery Version, call us toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
You're listening to the Logos Radio Network at logosradionetwork.com.